Hello, hello, hello. This is Tooth Be Told. This is Dr. Walter Aka, and I have the honor, the pleasure of having Mr. Eric Miller on. He is going to basically blow your mind when it comes to how to think about finance, how to think about your practice, how to think about everything that we don't ever get taught in dental school. We were actually having a little side conversation before we came on. I said, we got to stop because I want to bring him on. And we need to have this conversation. We were messing it up. We were doing too well
We
without
were.
recording anything.
That's okay. We got plenty of time, and
That's it.
I can retain. I can retain what I said pretty well.
Yes, perfect. So, Eric, give me a bit of your background. How did you get into basically helping dentists understand the power of their practice, the power of, basically their value?
Started back in 2008. We decided to start a financial planning company in 2008, which, probably wasn't the smartest decision back
You're a
then.
brave man.
Everything was just imploding at that time.
Right.
I've always, we always wanted to be able to, help people financially. And, a lot of people that have experience with financial advisors, most of the experiences, hey, my advisor, he kind of helps me with my retirement planning. I maybe talk to him once or twice a year. Charge me a fee, and that's pretty much it. And I didn't really want to do that model. That wasn't very interesting to me. I come from a healthcare background, so I saw how underserved healthcare owners were when it came to financial matters. Just like you said, very good on the practitioner side, on the finance side, on the business side, not so much. So we just really decided that we wanted to niche in working with healthcare owners, dentists, veterinarians, physical therapists. And I got my you know what handed to me early on because I was trying to give financial advice, and there was one thing that I didn't know, and that was how your practice operated, how the practice, what the business side of the practice, what drove the revenue. What were your profit margins? What should your ratios be, your key performance indicators? And I'm thinking, like, I'm a financial advisor. I'm supposed to give good advice, and I don't know anything about their biggest investment, which is their practice. So I really had to just, go all in on learning about the business side of owning a practice. And it really paid a lot of dividends because, now I can show dentist, anyone, any healthcare owner, how to integrate their practice into their household, which seems to be missing for a lot of people.
Okay, well, let's start off by asking a question. Do you think that financial advisors understand dental practicing and understand how dentists, financially do when it comes to, their practice and how that goes? Because you said you didn't understand it, and that's what you were doing.
I didn't understand how their practice operated and how much they should pay themselves, the profit margins, the value of the business, all these things. And if I'm trying to, like, get people out of debt, if I'm trying to help people build retirement reserves, and if I'm trying to help them build other income sources, well, you have this practice where millions of dollars filters through this thing every single year. And by and large, what happens is a lot of the money gets lost in the practice and never gets to the household. So people, your goals don't fail you, your systems do. And we had to show people that you got to set up a financial system that allows money to flow to the household. Otherwise, you're just going to have a job as opposed to really having an investment. And that's one thing I learned early on.
Well, so you mentioned the idea of, dentists paying themselves. I know a lot of dentists just say, after I pay everything out, my overhead, after I pay everybody else, whatever's left is mine. Right? And you notice that too, right? So the question I have is, how is that just flawed when it comes to that kind of mindset? And how do you help dentists kind of switch their mindset to understanding what a business is supposed to look like?
So we gotta back up to a fundamental basic of money when it comes to a business. There's two of them, actually. Two really fundamental natural laws, whatever you want to call them, that I've learned over the last 15 years. And this isn't a practice. This is like a household, a government. Number one, any organization is going to try to spend every living dollar that it makes and then some.
And then some.
Okay.
unless you can print money for free, but that's another story for another
All
day.
right. So, and I learned this, it doesn't matter if you have a practice doing $1 million or $5 million or $10 million, there's always going to be a demand on your money from something, whether it's overhead, salaries, there's always a demand, taxes, whatever it is. Okay, that's rule number one. That governs expenses. What governs income? Number two is that a organization will make the exact amount of money it thinks it needs to make to survive. So where money comes from, and I ask people like why does your practice do 120,000 a month? And they look at me like, well, I don't know, because we're seeing this many patients, we do, this many rounds or cleanings. And I'm like, no. I go, why are you doing 120 or 150 or 200,000? They're like, I don't know. I'm like, because that's what you think you need to bring in, all right, for this business to survive. It's the law of necessity, right? So money comes from necessity. Like if I, Walter, if I asked you like tomorrow, like, hey, you need to come up with $10,000 to save your child's life, you would come up with that $10,000, right? And then some. So money comes from necessity.
Very well
Okay.
said. Very well said.
So when we're starting to look at how we're managing our business, one of the things that, we look at overhead as a necessity. We look at staff pay as a necessity. We look at our rent as a necessity. Do you look at your profits as a necessity? No, because you just mentioned, I just hope that there's something left over at the end of the month. All right.
Hope. That's right. Hope.
So our contention is that you will never have a profit consistently unless you make it an expense, make it look like a necessity. And that is the first law of managing a dental practice. If you want to be profitable, if you want to be able to take home money for yourself and have reserves and be able to expand and pay your taxes, you got to make that a bill. And it's got to be part of how you come up with the make break number for the organization. And that's the first area that I start with a lot of practice owners. And to answer your question, like most financial advisors are not going to do that because they're not going to know anything about that. But we've had the luxury of working with a lot of dental practices. So, we can teach them.
So is it difficult to have that switch of mindset, right? Because I personally just kind of from knowing dentists and knowing, business, I've realized that most dental practices are not run like businesses, right? For example, and I say this not to be disrespectful to anybody, but I say this like this. When, you go to McDonald's, they know how much each pickle that they put on their sandwich cost and where that comes from. And they're, when it, but you go to a dental office and they'll sit there and you'll be like, oh, how much is that, floss? How much does that cost? Oh, well, my assistant does that part. Okay, well, then how much does that? And it's like you can go down the line. They just know the total, but they don't know each individual pieces. And I feel like as a business, you have to know where you're losing money and where you can do better with overhead and so forth. How do you get dentists to kind of start thinking that way?
Well, first and foremost, I got to stop having them think so much as practitioners. So again, you went to school on 5, 7 years to learn how to be a dentist, if however long that was, and you learned how to be a top-notch practitioner to do the technical skills. But when you decided to own your own practice, and a lot of people are like, I remember that day, and it was a glorious day. I was like, I'm gonna go out on my own, I'm gonna do this, and we're gonna dominate the world.
It's fun
But
until it's not fun.
exactly. But there's two other roles that you neglected that you had to learn, and that was how to be a good executive and how to be a real owner investor. And when I say that, like, what is your owner role? Is to look at this practice as an investment and not just a job. And when that's the mindset shift right there. And for the most successful owners that I've seen when it comes to money, they look at their practice as an investment and not just a place to go to work and treat for 8 hours a day and then go home. They look at it as a long-term investment. How can I create this thing? And before probably 4 or 5 years ago. I get it, because most practices probably sold for what, 65 cents on the dollar, somewhere around there. Mm-hmm. Well, that's changed in the last 4 or 5 years.
Mm.
You know, these practices now, these dental practices, if you run them right,
mm-hmm.
and if you treat them like an investment, then they're selling for pretty high multiples right now. So it is something that we try to ingrain in a lot of dentists, to like, stop thinking so much like a practitioner, start thinking like an owner investor.
And are you doing that because you've noticed the growth in, you know, hedge fund and VCs coming into the dental field and bigger corporations buying these smaller practices? Is that what you're doing? Are you gearing dentists to kind of think that way, to say, what's my exit strategy look like? Is that what you're doing?
Well, I want them to get prepared.
Okay.
Everyone has an exit at some point.
Okay.
Whether you're 35 or you're 55 or you're 65, you're going to exit out of your business at some point.
Right.
You got to start thinking how you want to do that. And you have to start preparing so that you're not dependent upon the sale of the practice for your retirement.
Mm.
And there's two things that we have to do there, is to get the business prepared so that it's valuable. So right. When you sell it, when you turn it over. And I would prefer people didn't have to sell to corporate, to be honest with you.
Okay.
I would prefer that they can sell to an associate or sell to a competitor or do some kind of internal transition or hang on to it for a period of time. I just don't want you to be in a position where you have to sell.
Mm.
And that happens to a lot of people and then some guys just die with their boots on, you know.
Unfortunately.
That's a strategy too.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't want people just to close it down. You
right.
know, but what ends up happening is that you're just going to, like, if you're working it and you're treating it like a job, I mean, you're working 5 days a week, and then you cut it down to four and then maybe three, and then the value just starts to diminish. And I don't think that's what most people want.
So do you think that dentists are doing a good job of actually planning for the future? You know,
I
what I mean?
Some of them are, but...
Well, I mean, not the ones that work with you, but I'm talking about just in general, whenever you meet these people, you know?
I would say that a majority of them are probably making enough money to live a comfortable lifestyle, but mm-hmm. they're not preparing themselves for either, what do you want to call it, retirement, or to being able to, like, really be financially independent.
Okay.
And I would say the vast majority of them aren't doing that.
So, you know, everywhere I see, even on your website and stuff like that, you talk about how your private practice is not a job.
Yeah.
Can you break that down and explain to it that way? Because, you know, dentists, the way we're ingrained is, you go to your practice. Your practice is what you have to do. That's your job. Right. Mm-hmm. But you come out of nowhere and you say, well, that's not your job. And no. You're like, wait a minute. I have to go here. I get paid when I do dentistry. So how is it not my job?
Well, it is a job when you're being a practitioner.
Okay.
It is a job. You have a job
right.
in the practice when you're playing the practitioner.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. That's your job.
Right.
But you also own it. And this thing has, and you have a team, and you're the leader of that team.
True.
And you had a vision at some point mm-hmm. of where you wanted this thing to go. And by definition, that makes you now an owner. And when you start having to manage other people, that by definition makes you an executive, because now you have to get other people to get work done as well. Because what fun is it to do all the work yourself? Maybe when you're young and, like, have a lot of energy, but
right.
some point in time you're going to, and not only that, but the value to the business then is mm-hmm. just you, and that's it.
Right.
If you want to build it so that it has real investment value, you want to start building some systems, get a team together. So maybe get another associate or two in there. So it's not just dependent upon you for this thing to function. And that's when you'd have something that would be considered more of a business.
Okay.
And that's why I think ideally I'd like to see a lot more owners focus a little bit more on that. You got to do the medicine. You got to practice in the beginning.
Right.
But at some point in time, look, I mean, there's only so many bricks a bricklayer can lay.
True.
And there's going to be a point in time where you're just like, I'm going to tap out. I don't want to be here. I want to hang out with my kids. I want to go do other things. I want to not be on call all the time. And so you got to start bringing other people on to get some of this work done.
So, Okay, so if that's the case, right, how do you help providers or clinicians that are in the rural parts of the US? That is the hardest place. I have a good friend of mine who is in the rural part of Pennsylvania, and the one thing he keeps mentioning is, listen, I'm doing well financially, right? His office is doing great, but finding an associate is really difficult. How does somebody get your services to make that transition easier so that they can later on follow your guidelines and rules and stuff? And how do you do that? And how do you compare? And then second part of my question is, how do you treat that provider different than somebody that's in like an urban area like LA?
So some of that's in a rural area because we have a lot of clients that obviously are in rural areas, smaller towns. Look, it's more challenging, that's for sure, for them to find associates, but it's the level of activity that you're willing to do. Look, I just have to find one person. We have a plan that's got 7 billion people on there.
Right.
So I don't want to operate too much on like there's nobody out there. We hear this in every single industry that we're in. There's not enough veterinarians, not enough dentists, or not enough optometrists. I can't find this. I can't find that. Go to their website, or go. Have you ever put an ad out? Well, no. Okay. Well, how do you think you're gonna find someone if you're not outflowing to like find someone?
And do you
You
help with
know,
that as well?
we don't personally do that,
Okay.
but I mean, I'll certainly, we hear it all the time. So
Right.
we have resources where we'll recommend people to go find, I think the luxury of working with like a multiple dentist, is that we get to see like, what are the really successful ones do?
Right.
How is it that you guys are so profitable and how is it that you're able to market so well? And, we're able to impart that knowledge on other practice owners when they come to us because like, hey, here's a resource that you can go to and maybe this will help you.
Okay. And so then the next question would be, a lot of dentists will sit here and say, I think I'm ready for an associate. And that's I think. But no one ever really knows what is that magic number. When do you, oh, you know, some, you might listen to a dental podcast or whatever. Of course, after you listen to ours, you may listen to another podcast and you may hear, oh, whenever your new patient expands out 3 months, then you're ready for an associate, right? So for you, I want to ask you, what are the guidelines, or what do you tell your clients, your dental clients? When are you ready to expand? How do you guide them through that?
I don't know that there's ever like a perfect time or answer of that. Obviously, you have to know your current facility and what its capacity is, and your capacity to do that. So that is one thing that I do ask a lot of people before they decide to like expand or get another clinic or hire someone is like, is this current facility that you're at right now, how close are you to its capacity? And it leads into like what your biggest expense is. Because when I'll ask a dentist, hey, what do you think your biggest expense is? Staff pay by far, right? I'm like, okay, nope, it's not. And they're like, well, what's my biggest expense?
Right, I
Hey,
would think staff too.
your biggest expense is money that you had the opportunity to make and you didn't,
Oh,
right?
break that down,
It's,
because now you said something that,
yeah.
go ahead.
So if I got a facility that can do $150,000 a month, let's
Okay.
just make an example.
Right.
And I'm doing 100. So I could do 150, but I'm only at 100. That's $50,000 of lost income.
True.
Okay. So that, to when I look at it, when I break it down, that's generally the biggest expense most people have, is
Okay.
that they're not at their capacity of their current facility. So that's first thing I exercise we do. Where are you at right now? Well, I'm about 85, 90%. Good. Do you have reserves in your business? Do you have savings? Yeah, when you get closer to capacity, money starts to be more abundant if you control it really well.
Right.
Do you have a hiring system? Do you have a really good marketing system for
Okay.
getting new patients in the door? These are all questions I would ask because if I'm going to hire someone, I'm going to need a plan on how to get new patients in the door for them. I'm
Okay.
going to need to make sure I have money in the bank because they're probably not going to be able to. They're not going to be at maximum production right away. So I'm going to need to make sure that I have plenty of reserves and I'm going to need a method of hiring or how we're going to bring on new people. Because if I bring on another dentist, I may need, another support person or what.
So
these are just all things that I would look at and say, you know, am I tapped out myself?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that would answer question number one of like when to bring on an associate. Like, I'm getting to a point where I can't take any more people on right
okay.
now. Okay. Do I have a method of getting a lot of new patients in the door? Is my marketing working? And you know, if your schedule's busy, I'm assuming it is.
Right.
So we may need to double up a little bit on the marketing. And then have I been really good at controlling money so that I've got money in reserves and such so that I can withstand? Because when you bring somebody on, there's, you know, like when you started your practice, I'm sure it wasn't all rainbows and unicorns. It was probably like, there's a lot of like resistance and like stuff that smacks you in the mouth. And anytime you expand, that's a natural phenomenon. That's going to happen. So you got to be prepared for that financially.
Right. How do dentists know when, like what their capacity is? Cause you mentioned that and we gave a rough number, but what do you go through to show a dentist, like this is what you could be doing and this versus this is what you're actually doing?
Well, I think, and I guess it's going to vary, but you know, there's industry statistics of like, you know, what should a dentist do per day?
Okay.
Like, you know, how many patients can you see a day? What's your average transaction should be? You know all the services that you do. Am I delivering the services that are, you know, not only people want, but have a pretty good profit margin and are fairly easy for my staff to deliver?
Okay.
So these are all things that you would, you know, we did have an exercise on there that that took a dentist through that really comes down to like, you know, how much should I be doing on average? And
do you consider insurance? Do you input insurance into that? Like what insurance are accepting and so forth? Is that a part of the equation?
I'm sure that's part of the equation as far as the average transaction, because I have an effect on the average transaction.
Right.
But you know, you just get a number. And again, you have different areas, you know, in Houston, it's probably, bad or it's good.
It's okay. It's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, maybe in Beverly Hills, California.
I was going to say, if you're talking sweet. DC or something, that might be better to.
So you can just kind of massage it based upon where you're at. But, you know, I think everyone can do that and figure out like what's, and again, this is the business side of it. This is trying to figure out like, oh, how is this going to work?
So let me ask you, and I'm not sure if I've even, because I've been kind of asking so many questions. You just got me excited and just jumped in. But tell me how you and your service are different from what a financial advisor would do.
Yeah, I mean, in a lot of ways, we do most of the things that a traditional financial advisor would do. We help people, you know, we create a financial plan. We show people how to direct money into, you know, investment vehicles. We show people how to get out of debt. We make sure that your assets are protected and, estate plan is up to date and current. And, you know, we give recommendations on tax strategies and all these things. So we do a lot of the services that most advisors do.
Okay.
I think the biggest thing that we do differently is that we actually set up a compensation system from the practice to the household so that I know with certainty that the practice is serving the household as it should.
Okay.
So I'll give you an example of that. So the first thing that I have every owner do to start, it'll probably freak you out because it's like, what? Is I have the practice pay the owner an owner compensation. So you're thinking like, what do you mean owner compensation?
Right.
Remember, you probably get paid, like when you pay yourself as a practitioner, right? You probably take some kind of a W-2 salary.
That's it.
You may even take some draws out, some profit distributions every once in a while. I kind of look at that as your executive pay.
Yeah.
What about your owner pay? All right. Your risk of putting that practice there.
Okay.
Like, do you realize how risky that business is? And, you know, like a lot of people had to borrow money to start their practice.
Right.
Your names are on all the notes, personally guaranteed. All these, you know, the building notes and the practice build outs. That's a big risk, isn't it?
It is.
All right. How about if insurance companies come in there and say, hey, you shouldn't have been doing this and we're going to fine you $50,000. Who's going to pay that? The owner's gonna have to
pay.
The
owner,
right?
Exactly.
Okay. If you get a rogue employee decides to sue you or take you to court or something like that, who's gotta deal with that? The
Okay.
owner does.
Right.
Guys take all the risk. So I think it's about time that you pay yourself for the risk that you're taking in this practice.
Okay.
So the first 10% of the practice revenue, first 10% of the practice revenue does not go anywhere else, but in a separate account. We call it a wealth storage account.
Okay.
Okay. This is an account that's owned by the household. It, when I say wealth storage account, it's just, it's a bank account.
Right. Okay.
But we set it up so that 10% every single week, 10% of whatever comes in that week goes, separates out into that account.
10% of profitability.
No, 10% of revenue.
Of revenue. Okay. Okay.
Yeah. 10% of revenue. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's getting real right now. This is where it's like, whoa, like a lot of guys are like, what?
Right.
Like, yeah. 10% of revenue.
Off the top.
Right off the top.
Got you.
Right off the top.
Okay.
Right? Goes right to you.
Okay.
And what is that money for? It's not for cars and boats and consumption. I know. It's because I want to get the household into a financially independent state.
Okay.
So if we can take that money and use that to invest in other income producing investments, whether that's real estate or, you know, traditional stocks, bonds, or insurance products, whatever it would be, anything that's going to produce some kind of cash flow, then I can really accelerate that person getting into a position where they're completely financially free.
Okay. Right? But not a question for that. And I'm going to ask a lead on is the entity that's getting paid. Do you also set up like an LLC for that entity or a trust or, you know, cause again, you don't have to, you know, spill all your secrets, but, but
now, a lot of people get into like, okay, what's the tax ramifications of that?
That's what
like,
I was
how
to,
do we,
yeah.
And you know what? People don't even worry about that right now. Let's just get the practice in a position. Now, when I say 10% right off the top, most people are like, there's no way on God's green earth that I could do 10% right off the top. And I'm like, you know why? Because you never made it a bill.
True.
Okay. So this is where we got to make it a bill, make it a necessity, create it in there. And, you know, this again, will go into most practice owners are operating on the wrong make break number. I'll usually go in there and I'll be like, okay, you're operating on this, you know, 140,000 a month, but you actually need to be at 160,000 a month.
Mm.
If you want to be able to do the things that I'm showing you here, right?
Okay.
They're like, oh, wow. Okay, well, you know, how do we make up the difference? Well, I mean, that's on you. I mean, you got to, how many more patients can you see? And, you know, what are some other additional things you can do to drive? It's not that hard. You know, when you break it down 23 days out of the month, I'm sure you can figure out, you know, one or two extra patients a week that would cover that. Okay. But man, wouldn't that make all the difference in the world if you could do that?
Oh yeah.
And that's the start. And, you know, we just start having people automatically and systematically take that money out, and don't worry about the taxes. We hire good CPAs that'll figure out the tax liability at the end of the year.
Okay.
And there's other things you can do to minimize your tax liability. I just want to make sure I'm not letting the tax tail wag the dog, so to speak.
Okay.
So, but typically we just have it separated out. Money needs to stay in movement, because if money stays static, it's going to get spent. Like if you had $100 in your pocket and you didn't have a purpose for it,
right,
it's going to get spent at some point in time.
Right.
So you got to keep money in motion. And I think that's one of the things that we're really good at, is just like showing owners, like, let's just keep this money in motion. Cause it'll keep the necessity level up. It will make sure that all these things are happening and you don't have to think about it, but you know it's happening.
Do you think that dentists are good wealth builders?
I think they're good in the practice. I think they're good at acquiring money.
Right.
I think they're lousy at controlling money.
Okay.
And I mean,
that's what leads to wealth building, right?
Yeah. I mean,
it's controlling that part. And
yeah, there's a triangle that I talk with a lot of people about. I just call it the ACE triangle. And it's the three corners of the formula for economic independence. Number one, you got to know how to acquire money, which I think, you know, look, dentists don't have to worry about that. I mean, this industry is $100 billion industry. People spend money on their teeth.
Very true.
Guys don't need to, like, money's there. Right. You just got to learn how to acquire it better.
Right.
Number the C is the control. How do we control the money? That means I have, when a dollar comes in, I know exactly where that dollar is going. Mm-hmm. And then the third part of the triangle is E, which is expand. How do I expand my money? And that means that I don't lose it. I don't, you know, get into stupid investments. Dennis get pitched all kinds of investments, by the way.
We do. You guys
are the biggest target for for investments and that I've ever seen. And, you know, I try to keep it simple and somewhat conservative because you take so much risk with your business. But those are real. That's it. You know how to acquire it. You're good at controlling it, and then just don't lose it and know how to expand it. And that means reinvesting back in your business and taking the profits and making sure that you're building wealth and income producing assets.
So, okay, well, you brought up something that's actually, and I wasn't even going to ask this, but you brought this up. This was great. You know, you mentioned how a lot of dentists are always like pitch something, right? Yeah. Everybody is always coming at us with something, a new deal or so forth. Financial advisors, yeah, you can reach out to them, but you're right. You know, most of the time we only talk to them maybe twice a year.
Yes.
How is your practice different where maybe can we reach out to you every time? Like, hey, look at this. Can you review this for me? Is that something that you do as well where you're like, hey, can you review this deal or can you give me advice on this? Right.
Wow, you're throwing me a heater right down the middle of the plate right now.
I have no choice. You brought it up.
No, it's perfect. Like I'm going to hit this out of the ballpark right now. Yeah. So this was one of the things when we first started our firm that was a problematic is that their financial planning, your relationship with your financial team, it needs to be frequent. You got kids.
Yep.
You know, take your attention off your kids for like, especially when they're young, for like 30 seconds.
Right.
And you don't know where they're going to go.
That's it.
Same thing happens with your money. Mm. You have to pay attention to your money. And this idea that we're just meeting with our financial team once a year, maybe twice a year, that's it. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't work. So we came up with a model where it's every single month we're talking with our owners.
Okay.
And it, you know, and we have, you know, checklists and things that we go over with them just to make sure that nothing is getting missed, that they have the right targets, that, you know, and look, financial questions come up all the time. I'm sure every day you're faced with financial decisions mm-hmm. that you got to make. And I want to make sure that people have access to their advisor so that they can, you know, ask questions and go over like what's going on this month. Well, I need to make this purchase or, you know, hey, this new practice opened up and I was thinking about buying it. And, or, you know, hey, I have extra money coming from a tax return. What are we going to do with it as part of our plan? You know, it's just constantly things. So it's like every single month, it's frequency. You need to be in touch with your financial team frequent. And that's on us as advisors though. That's just a flaw in the financial service model is that most guys just get paid on how much investments you have with them, how many investments that you have with them.
And you know, here's another thing. You mentioned how you guys are pretty much a one-stop shop, right? Where you have CPAs and you have financial advisors. We'll put that in quotations. You have different people that can help the practice overall.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at it from that point of view, some people may say, well, how is that beneficial? Like a monopoly isn't good, right? Because the person that ends up suffering is the consumer. So how do you guys make it where the dentist is getting the most out of you guys, right? Versus going to a CPA here and a financial advisor here and, you know, a tax expert, you know, here, you know what I mean? Like, and a business, you know, marketing group here. Like, how do you make sure that you give them everything, but at the highest quality?
Well, there are things that we can't do. I mean, I'm not an accounting firm,
right?
But we do refer out
right,
CPAs.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Same thing on the legal end. You know, I don't do wills and estates, but we certainly will give recommendations and we know what people probably need. But everybody needs like a quarterback, someone that can, that directs things. And that's the biggest problem right now. CPAs, what's the CPA's job? is to make sure that your taxes are filed on time. Right. That's what they do.
That's it.
And very few of them do tax planning. Very few. So that's when we're coming in there, you know, I have a stat. I say, what's your effective tax rate? Oh, it was 39% last year. I'm like, okay, your CPA is not really a tax planner. He's a tax preparer. And you need someone that can do both.
Okay.
Oh, well, okay. And look, I mean, I don't win all the time. I wish I did. Right. But you know, my job, you know, we see the results is, you know, if I can get people to produce more, save more, invest more, get rid of debt, be more protected, feel more in control of their money. I can't always put a price tag on that every single year, but it always seems to be well in excess of whatever someone pays me.
Okay.
And that's how we justify what we charge someone.
So basically what I want to try to make sure I understand is you, like as a quarterback, you're distributed and making sure that you get the most out of the money that your dentist or your client basically brings to you. You want to try to get the most out of it and prevent them from basically losing as much as possible to taxes or whatever it may be, correct?
Sure. I want to make sure that they don't overspend in certain areas in their practice. I want to make sure money doesn't get lost. I want to make sure that they're setting up systems so it gets to them personally. Right. I want to make sure that they accelerate getting rid of their bad debt. I want to make sure that they're protected, you know, all these things. You know, and then of course on the investment side, I want to make sure that they make money on their investments, but nobody can guarantee that.
Right.
You know, I don't know that, you know, XYZ investment's going to perform at 10% or 8% or 5%, but there, I don't need to worry about that because your habits are what's going to drive how well you perform.
Okay.
And I think that's a bit of a misnomer with financial. Oh, my advisor made me 25% last year.
Right.
I'm like, no, he didn't. The stock market did, you know?
Right.
He may have positioned you in stocks that went up.
Right.
So you see, there is a, I mean, again, that's just one of those things where when you hire an advisor, are you hiring just them just to manage your investment portfolio, or do you want them to do more than that? And right. I think that most dentists deserve to have a little bit more.
Right. So how, you know, whenever you listen to, I don't know, commercials and you hear lawyers say, well, we don't win unless you win, you know, that, right?
Yeah.
It makes people feel good. It makes people feel like you have stake in the game as well, right? My success is your success. So, you know, just from my listeners, I want to make sure that they understand that you have a stake in their practice and you, their success is also your success and your success is their success. How do you kind of orchestrate all that to make sure that both sides are benefiting from this relationship?
Well, again, this goes to what's omitted from a lot of financial advisors. And I'm sure, do you keep statistics in your practice, right? I mean,
we have no choice. Yeah. Go ahead.
We have to keep them, don't we? But if I ask people, do you keep financial stats for your household? They're like, what?
Right.
I'm like, yeah. Do you have financial statistics that will tell me how well your household, like what's your savings rate? What is your debt to assets ratio? What's your tax? What's your effective rate? What's your asset protection ratio? So how I'm able to now justify to people, you know, our worth is that we have measurements and statistics that we can show them at the household level and the business level as well. Cause I look at your profit margins, although you're mostly in charge of that. But usually when I get in there and I give you better targets, your profit margins are going to go up because you see that you're deficient.
Mm-hmm.
And so these are things that we measure so that you can see like, oh my gosh, like I'm not in good shape or I'm doing okay. And we do that every single year so that the person can see like the improvement that they've made. And by and large, it's, you know, most of the improvement, you add up all these things, taking your 10%, accelerating your debt. I mean, minimizing your tax liability. It's hundreds of thousands of dollars of value that's created every single year, you know, on someone that's got a practice that's maybe doing $750, $1 million. You know, you can get that kind of improvement.
Right. Right.
So it doesn't have to be a huge, you know, gigantic practice that you only get the results on.
Okay, cool. And here's the one. What typically stands in the way of achieving financial goal, right? In the end, we want to all retire millionaires, right? Multi-millionaires, right? But there's always, you know, not everybody gets to do that. And not everybody, you know, you have dentists that will work, and they never retire.
Yeah.
And some of them because they love what they do, others yeah. because they can't. Right. So what stands in the way of achieving that financial goal that you and them have set together?
Oh, usually anything that will break a relationship is generally like a third party. And when I say that, from the look
on
your face,
yeah, but go ahead, break it down.
I mean, you know, two people can be really, really tight.
Right.
And then there's this other person that gets in someone else's ear and starts to create chaos.
Okay.
Conflict.
Okay.
And that happens in practices all the time.
Right.
You know,
right.
And that, like any other relationship, you know, when it comes to money, it's a very highly charged area, meaning that a lot of people have a lot of like emotion on it. And there's a lot of opinions on it. And I can't always say, look, I'm 100% right all the time. I think I know the basics pretty well.
Right.
I think we know what works pretty well. Someone may have a investment option that has higher returns than maybe something that we're offering. Okay, great. So that's usually something that will break a relationship is that. And then really the person's own personal ethics has a lot to do with that. You're chewing on that one right now too. I'll give you an example of that.
Okay. Yeah. Every time you you know, you mention something, because I think about what my friends and I talk about and so forth, and you know, I've realized that with any and everybody, right, we get caught up in meme stocks and we get caught up in all the hype of everything, Bitcoin and so forth, and it's very difficult for people to understand slow and steady wins the race.
Yeah.
How do you help people get that mindset, right? We always talk about compounding interest and how great it is and how wonderful and, you know, it's the eighth wonder of the world and so forth. But people have a hard time sticking to that and then making sure that money is growing slowly. They want Bitcoin speed. They want Nvidia. They want, you know, they want all that speed. And then they feel like, hey, I'm missing out if I'm not in it.
Yeah. And it's hard. That is a challenge. That's one of the things that we have to try to navigate. And I don't know that I always have the perfect answer for someone on how they do that.
Right.
I just know you have to have a strategy. Okay. And maybe in that strategy, we create a bucket where it's like your own little play bucket where we're going to divert some of that. So I'll give you that 10%. All right.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you got $1 million practice.
Okay.
And I'm getting you to put $100,000 in your wealth storage account every single year. Number one, that's pretty awesome there. Just to see
incredible.
That. Okay.
That's incredible. Awesome. I'll be the first one to let you know. That's incredible.
Like that's pretty you awesome know? Just to do that
that's
in the
it.
First place. Okay.
Yeah.
And let's say of that $100,000 now, we're going to take 40% of that $40,000 and we're going to put that into some real estate, whatever that would be. All mm-hmm. right. And we're going to mm-hmm. take $20,000 and we're going to put that into maybe like in, you know, some kind of a dividend stock portfolio.
Okay.
Okay. Maybe I take some, put it into a life insurance policy or an annuity or something like that, just so I have protected money.
Okay.
And then I take another $10,000 and we're going to put in the roll the dice.
Okay.
Money, like our speculative bucket.
For sure. For okay? sure.
And then maybe that satisfies or satiates that person's mm-hmm. urge to be able to do that. 90% of it's going to be going into slow and steady, but I'm going to take that 10%
gotcha.
Of it and I'm going to roll the dice with this a little bit. I'm totally fine
okay.
if someone wants to do that. But let's just make sure, number one, we're taking the full 10%. Number two, our practice is growing, because really nothing's going to be able to match the practice
growth
and the building. If you can grab the building of where your practice is as well. Those are going to be really two staple long-term income sources for you.
Okay.
If you can continue to do that. So it's just part of a strategy. You just got to have a strategy.
Okay.
And I think that'll get over the whole FOMO,
okay.
you know, syndrome.
You know, and one thing that people talk about nowadays is financial freedom. You know,
yeah.
they even have the FIRE movement, financial independent, retire early. They have that FIRE movement. Everybody's talking about this, right?
Yeah.
How do you know when you've reached financial freedom? And I know you bring the whole household into this equation, which a lot of people don't, right? But how do you know when you've reached financial freedom where you can say, I'm good?
Okay. So it's not a number.
Oh.
Although you should be looking at a number.
Okay.
And everyone probably has a number
right.
that they think of, like I need 10 million or 5 million or 7 million or whatever that would be.
Yeah.
But it really isn't a number. It is a overall condition. I usually just define it like this. Financial freedom would be a condition where your household has an abundance of income coming in from multiple sources, where you're free of all bad debt.
Okay.
Notice I said bad debt, not
you
all
did.
Debt, right?
You did.
Your practice is profitable, transferable, and sustainable. Your assets are protected from taxes, inflation, and lawsuits.
Hmm.
And you have time to pursue whatever life goals that you have. Now, if I told you that was the condition that you were in, you'd be like, yeah, I'm pretty financially free at that point
right,
in time.
Right.
So that would be, so now the job is just work backwards from there and let's get the systems in place so that we can do all those things. And it doesn't have to take, you know, I don't know how old you are. You look like you're probably in your 30s or, you know, maybe
40s.
40, 40s.
I'm 42.
Okay.
I'm about to be 42, man.
Okay.
You know?
Right. So,
but I can lie to you and tell you I'm 30. If
yeah. So 30s, 40s, you know, late 30s, right. Early 40s. There you go.
Right.
But it, you know, you shouldn't have to wait until you're 65.
Right.
You know, this game should be done for you in the next 7 to 10 years. Right. That's it.
Oh.
Okay.
Okay.
So, but it's going to start with getting a plan in place.
Right.
You know, doing some things probably a little different than what you're doing right now and, you know, getting that 10% ripped out and making sure that doesn't, you know, destroy the practice at the same time. You got to be careful when you do that. Cause you know, but that would most likely allow you to do it in like 7 to 10 years. Cause your practice isn't just going to go like this.
Right.
I mean, it's going to grow. Exactly. And then obviously more you're able to take out will benefit you.
So I'm going to ask you a tough question here, if I haven't already, right? It's you know, how do you have that tough discussion with dentists where you go into a practice? Because I can guarantee you not every practice that you go into is doing this, is going in this right direction. There may be practices that they turn to you because they're like, I don't know what to do. I don't want to lose this practice. I'm not there. I don't have a lot of the stuff that I should. How do you sit them down and say, you need to buckle up, we need to get this done, and give them that hard, sometimes unwanted or hard to hear truth?
Yeah.
You know, how do you do that?
I think it's the really simple thing to do is like, tell me what ideally your life would look like, ideally what you want your life to look like in 7 to 10 years. How do you want it to look? I'll start with there because people don't really respond to that. They respond to dreams. Mm. They respond to, you know, you'll get people to like actually engage with you when you start like looking about, like everybody just wants to know that there's a bright future.
Yeah.
And I think honestly, with everything going on today, that's one of the things that is causing a lot of, you know, people just don't think there's a bright future anymore.
Okay.
And I do.
I like that.
You know?
No, that's very true. You're absolutely correct.
So
it confuses me. I'll be honest with you. I'm like, the world is not all roses and, you know, but that's how I grew up. But you're right. People don't respond. Like, you know, my wife and I have this discussion. Yeah. She's like, sometimes you just got to tell, like, even with an assistant that isn't performing.
Yeah.
She always tells, she's like, you got to tell them in a way where it doesn't seem like you're attacking them.
Yeah. Yeah. Making people wrong, you know, and sometimes you got to get in someone's grill and say, you know, and you know that, and you know when that time is where you can just like, you know, like, all right. Enough's enough.
Right.
You know, all you're doing is self-sabotage right now. If you want to self-sabotage, go do it someplace else. Don't do it here.
Right.
But I think for the most part, if you can encourage, if you can validate people, if you just acknowledge people, you know, just acknowledge someone like, hey, you did a good job today. Here's a $20 gift certificate or something like that. Or it doesn't take much. To get people to, you know, engage with you. And again, this is your job as an owner to do that. And it's not easy. It's not, but that's the leadership that I think people need to have.
And is that how you kind of engage a dentist who is just not going the right path, and they find their practice to be more of a burden?
Yeah, I mean, that kind of person, you got to find out what it is that is causing that. And it's not usually a what, it's a who.
Okay.
And when I say it's a who, it is someone that is actively, because naturally people, I think, want to do well and produce and they want to grow.
Right.
And the only time that you're going to not, that you're going to want to give up, that you're going to want, is when you feel like you're suppressed. Like when you feel like you have someone, there's a foot on my back of my neck, and I feel it, but I don't know where it is. And that is the toughest thing to do. That's understanding human beings. Right. But there are indicators of people like that in your organization that are trying to do you in, and they don't do it overtly. They don't like, oh, Walter, you know, I'm just let you know, I'm basically trying to like sabotage you. No. They don't do that.
Right.
They do it very covertly.
Mm.
They create gossip. They pass on bad news all the time. Mm. They generalize. They, you know, they're merchants of chaos.
That's it.
What can I say?
That's
you
it.
Know? So once you get those people out of your life, and whether it's family or whether it's, you know, someone in the organization, miracles happen to you. Miracles happen to you.
And so I'm gonna end with this, and then we'll kind of wrap it up here. But I want you to tell me a story or a time where you actually were looking. You go into an office and you're looking around. You're seeing. You're like, man, this doesn't add up. This doesn't make any sense. Come to find out, there is a whole situation with maybe someone taken from the practice or doing this. And you're like, you know, because the practitioner is like, we should be doing way better than we are. But of course, you've done the deep dive and you've kind of done the audits and you're like, oh, and then you notice this. Like, how did you handle that? Or how do you handle situations like that?
Well, I've generally heard it from like consultant groups that we work with that that actually will go into the office and like look at all the personnel and everything like that. But no, it's usually an owner that, I think there was one example that let's see, I had an owner, boy, she was mean, and she was just mean. And
you're trying to be politically correct, I can tell.
Yeah. I was like, I finally was like, God, what is it? Why are you so mean? Right. And mad all the time.
Right.
And, you know, I think we had, I had met her practice manager, and, you know, you just meet someone and you just get this icky flow from them. Like, ugh. And it turns out that practice manager had been stealing from her for like the better part of about 7 years.
There it is.
Okay.
There it is.
And she finally was able to confront, and you know, she had her own issues.
Right.
You know, the owner did. She let her do basically whatever she wanted to, gave her controls of the money.
Mm.
You know, she had her own transgressions on this. She was not clean.
Right.
The owner wasn't. Okay. Right. But that doesn't justify that person stealing.
True.
So, okay, but here's the thing that happened. She got rid of her. Okay. Her practice doubled in a year.
Mm.
Yeah. Practice doubled in a year. So when I tell any owner that's listening to this, there's two miracles of business. All right. The first miracle is the day where that first patient actually shows up to your door and you're like, oh my God, this may work. Second miracle of business is when you get rid of someone in your office that is actually, you know, trying to, you know, stop or blunt the goals of the organization, and you get them out, your revenue can double, but it will probably go up 20, 30, 40%.
That's awesome.
Just by getting that rid of that person. That's the best financial advice I can give somebody.
Free too. You just gave it for free. Eric, I want you to just summarize what your company does, and then also how people can reach out to you, because I know you have an ebook that's awesome. I got a chance to read a little bit of that.
Good.
I got prepared. I don't want to look like a bum, but I wanted to kind of have you tell us one a good summary of how your company can help our audience, and then also how they can reach out to you.
Yeah. So We mostly work with owners, although we're starting to work with associates, but mostly it's owners that we're going to work with. We start with writing you a personal financial plan. It integrates on your business into the equation, because that is one of your biggest investments. So we're going to show you how to integrate the cash flow of the practice into your household a lot more efficiently than what you're doing right now. Set up systems that you take more profit for yourself. And then we're going to show you how to allocate that money, how to invest that money. We're going to show you how to get out of debt. We're going to make sure that all your assets, are protected, from, taxes, inflation, lawsuits. And we're going to show you how to go out at the top of your game. That's what our firm does.
One-stop shop. Like I said,
you're
humble enough, but it sounds like a very much like a one-stop shop. So how does the listeners get a hold of you or, and I'll put a lot of the stuff in the show notes, by the way, but I wanted to kind of, hear from you.
I think you can just go to wealthfordentists.com, wealthfordentists.com. I mean, the name of our firm is Econologix, but nobody can remember that, right, nor say it. So I think we just say wealthfordentists.com is a good landing page.
Right. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah. And then you have videos on there. You have webinars. Yep. I remember webinars. You have YouTube videos and everything. So before anybody even says, "We're going to work with you," you give them a lot of resources.
I think we try to like at least get them out there and like show them like, this is what we do. These are the things that we're going to help you with. This is how we're different than, your Edward Jones guy or your Ameriprise guy and your Merrill Lynch guy. And, look, we're not for everyone. We do some things that I think are against like what a lot of typical advisors would say to do with your money. But, I don't think that way. I think everything we do is I just try to impart common sense and, with your money. And that seems to be lacking in a lot of areas in life right now.
Okay. And I said it was my last question, but I want to ask you, because you just brought something up again. Yeah. When it comes to, the initial consultation, like how long do you sit down with them to try to explain to your dental, clients what to expect? Like, I'm sure you sit down and have a conversation like, this is exactly how we're different and so forth. So what should they expect in the consultation or like a, discussion with you initial?
Yeah. Initially we have a 30 minutes to an hour intro call where we're going to ask you questions, just like you're going to ask us questions. And we're going to ask you questions about, the size of your practice, and we're going to ask you questions about things that you want to accomplish. And we're going to ask you questions about, what's your biggest concerns that you have right now? Like what are you facing? And that's free. We don't charge for that. And then generally speaking, if it looks like, there's interest there, we will have you talk with one of the advisor that you would work with. And all these advisors are trained. They all understand your industry. And then it's very important on the front end that we establish, a connection,
right,
so that we outline, we show you like a plan. These are the things that we look at. These are the things that we do. I mean, in our industry, we have to be very, very transparent,
right,
about, our pricing, how much we're going to charge you, all those things. I mean, we're very transparent on all of those things. So we have to disclose everything. We are, I guess you would, the fiduciary word is a big word for advisors. Mm-hmm. We're a registered investment advisor, so we do have to act under fiduciary capacity, but I typically am like, okay, a lot of people can, I mean, I'm sure you've met a lot of dentists that you would not, send your worst enemy to just because they got a license.
Right.
There's a lot of advisors out there that just because they have a, they're a fiduciary. I'm like, you got to look a little deeper than that when you're picking your partner.
Well, Eric, thank you so much, man, for taking the time to come and just talk to our audience and just kind of advise us and educate us on what to look for. And hopefully, we will talk again.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Man, that's awesome. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this episode of Tooth Be Told. The opinions on this episode are just that, our opinions. Please consult your dental professional before taking any action with your dental health. If you have any questions about anything you heard on this episode, please contact us at Real Dentist with an S. That's R-E-A-L, Dentist with an S at gmail.com. We would be very happy to return any message that we receive, because we love the communication that we have with our listeners.